Welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast, a Jaybird. How goes it?
How's it going today?
Wunderbar. It is nice. Freaking. My head feels like somebody's taking a vise and they're just cranking it on my head, Jay, because I'm going from 60 degrees to snowing. So that's what's going on with me.
You got the low pressure syndrome setting in again, huh?
Horrible. Ick. But anyway. Goodness gracious, folks, we got a big one for you. We got a big one coming up. The all-star of muskie fishing, right? The GOAT, if you will. The Tiger Woods. The LeBron James. The Worm, Dennis Rodman. Of tournament muskie fishing, Matt Raley.
The Ranger Tournament Master, Matt Raley.
Frickin', this guy's, he's won enough Rangers to open a dealership.
He pretty much has.
I love Matt. He's so cool. No, yeah. He's the coolest. But Jay, you got some big news on some stuff. I'm going to tell you guys flat out, okay? Flat out. And I'm getting messages from dudes, and I appreciate it. It is the Titan update, and here's what you're going to get. Holy crap, my life is shit. So, it has been the toughest, most gut-wrenching, insane ordeal ever. They are en route. They are in the freaking Chicagoland area, finally.
Yeah.
They are delayed, and it has been delay after delay after delay after delay. They will be there in a hot minute. I have a tracking number with an estimated date. I'm not going to say it yet. When it comes out, we will do a special podcast. We'll launch the special one about diving rise and alert everybody. But holy crap. I'm not even going to say when they're supposed to be there because it's like, oh, they're freaking in Wichita for 7 days. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, the last week has been torture.
Coming though, like.
They really are. They really are.
Con. A little Star Trek for you. They're coming. They're real. I got boxes of them. I look rather swagalicious on the cover of the box. I think.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
Swag daddy, if you will. But there is some funky, fun stuff going on at the Muskie Shop. Jay, tell us more.
We've got a free shipping event this weekend. So if you need anything. Great time to pick something up.
Free
shipping.
Free.
Well, next week, a week from today, Friday, is the Wisconsin Muskie Expo. And it, correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but I think it's the last show of the year, right?
Indeed.
Minnesota was last week, so I think it's the last one. So that's not too far from us. It's in the Wausau area. It's just south of us at the Muskie Shop, that is. And we're going to have a sale weekend that weekend, online or in-store.
In-store.
10% off everything except gift cards.
There you go.
So if you need a rod, reel, tackle box, net, lure.
Get your ass supplies, to the Muskie Shop.
Clothing.
Get there now.
Get there now. Weekend. Yeah.
Or Elmer will come and awesome. Drag you to the Muskie Shop.
Well, there's been discussion of having Elmer set up a table like from noon to 12:15 and have a signing event for his upcoming
quest for
which
Titan.
Has been delayed. Yeah, the Quest for Titan, the movie premiere has been delayed. We're going to wait till the Titans are here. Yeah,
I played
to release that on YouTube. So
I played
a lot of people looking forward to that.
Jay,
Steve,
I played a small snippet.
Right. Well, your voiceover work was beyond excellent.
In a world where Elmer Jensen. Anyway, I played a small snippet of The Quest for Titan for our dear friend MG.
Okay.
She died.
Did she like it?
Literally, I had to perform compression because she died. Folks, it is the greatest musky film ever made about a dive and rise bait. It just simply is.
Yeah, yeah. Think about it.
Think about it.
It is good. It is funny. Yeah, there's a lot of little jokes in there, some of them go over the head of some people, I noticed. I screened it for some people at work, and Tom turned to me today and said, after watching it the second time.
Oh, they got, where's the palettes?
He said, isn't that two words? The three word joke at the end. I'll leave it at that. Yeah. So that's it's actually joke. Two. It's a joke. It's a joke.
It's a joke. Lots of good jokes. We got lots of jokes.
Lots of jokes, folks.
So, guys, the Titan saga. This is literally why we did the Elmer, because it is a saga of getting these things. But the quest for Titan in a world where Elmer Jensen is the sexiest musky fisherman alive. No one can stop his diving rise. Quest
for alien species is too deadly.
The quest for fatties with Elmer Jensen. Anyway, that's your update, folks. I've got patchy baldness from pulling my hair out on trying to get these things to the shop. But We got good stuff going on. Freaking free shipping. You can't go wrong. Got the 10% coming up, and I got to give a shout out. Yee yee. To my boy at Wreck and Rack, Jay.
Josh. Mm-hmm.
Joshua. Freaking built me the baddest custom boxes you've ever seen for the Steve Paul Musky Pro 20.
Ooh, nice.
So, light up tackle box, got it. Special camera gear tackle box, got it. Deck extension, got it. And we tested them today, boy, I'll tell you. I had some mountains of men today on the boat. And they make Fred Palmiero look like a lightweight.
Sure. Okay.
And we were talking about it. I said, they're like, can we stand on them? I said, we'll find out. And it was really cool. All the stuff I've ever said about Wreck and Rack, like the bump board flinging out of the boat, the build quality. Josh doesn't play around. So at least a big shout out. Yee yee.
What does that mean?
I don't know, Jay. I've been freaking... Okay. I'm on Pepsi number 6.
Cool.
I was looking Pepsi. But dude, they're freaking knockouts. Super stoked about them. Let me put it this way, Jay. My tackle box lights up. And so it says Wreck and Rack on top. And when you light it up... Me and Josh have talked about it. Creates a Wreck and Rack logo in the sky, very similar to the bat signal.
Did he do that engraving where it says the Steve Paul signature series on there?
No, he didn't.
Oh, should have.
There's not enough room. It's in our the okay. Steve Paul signature series is in our hearts, though, isn't it? Though, really,
it is. It really is.
It is. It's my narcissism knows no bounds. Buy my hat. Buy my hoodie. Muskyshop.com. But he put it on there. It's so cool. So. When I light it up, though, right, I turned it on, he just appears. Now, it's awkward when he does because he's not going to do anything other but, hey, you need a tackle box, which is not a very useful superpower. I'm just throwing that out there like, like this thing, hey, you need a tackle box? Well, it's sort of like cyclically stupid because I called you with the tackle box you already gave me, so if I need a tackle box, you see where I'm going with this?
It's kind of a bland power.
It really is. He just sort of manifests, and he's like, hey, you need a tackle box? But I wish I had a superpower, but he sees the Wreck and Rack signal in the sky, and he just sort of shows up. So,
wow.
Awkward. So, no, it's awesome. Anyway, Jay, on to what they came for. We have done it, folks. We drummed him up. Matt Raley lowered his standards far enough to talk to me and Jay. Here she blows. All right, it's Captain Matt. Ahoy, hoy, Matt.
How's it going?
Matt, how's it going, Matt?
Folks, Matt Raley has stepped. He's slumming right now, Jay, I think, talking to us. It's a step.
He's state hopping right now. He's all over the place.
He sunk low enough to talk to us, Matt Raley. Matt, if you don't know, Matt, you have won the Post Malone Technical Tournament a couple times. Isn't that what that stands for? Or is it people making tater tots? Or I don't know.
Oh, that one. No, you got it all wrong, Steve.
Oh, I thought it had to do with Post Malone. I don't know. Not a big tournament scene. Matt is, if you don't know, you should know. That's what's up, dog. Mm-hmm. Matt has crushed some PMTT. He is like, if there's the Rangers winner circle, right, Jay? And we had it at the Muskie Shot Bass.
Right.
Matt Raley is the sun in the center of that universe.
Yeah, he's won a few. I can't even keep track. He's won some championships, and I mean, Matt's not one to toot his own horn, but toot. I'll do some tooting. He's won some championships, some separate tournaments, and he's what is it called? Team of the Year? A couple times. Didn't you?
We won an outright once, and then we tied for Team of the Year points one other year.
Yeah. Not easy to do. A lot of good, really good competition in that. It's the biggest muskie tournament ongoing right now every year, the PMTT. So, very cool stuff. You got to know what you're doing. So that's why we called you. Tell us what to do.
What? No.
Keep your bait wet.
Thanks, folks. Thanks for tuning in. Good night. No, it's Matt.
That's a wrap.
Keep your bait wet. No. Matt knows where the bodies are buried, and obviously, if you don't know, like I said, you guide Wisconsin, and you do other species too. So you're trucking it to Florida right now, Matt?
No, I'm headed that way pretty quick. Yeah. You learn that tarpon game. You know, it's just like muskie fishing. So. I'll be able to figure out pretty quick.
Yeah, we'll get that down. But I would say if I'm thinking Matt Raley, I think rubber. Right? So let's you throw a bit. Did I just give away the secret there? Should I shut up? It's just like
Well, you know.
Okay. Matt Raley, Bucktail King. I don't know what you people want.
won the first Ranger boat with bucktails. You know, I can mix it up a little bit.
Well, you throw some rubber. I don't know. Why don't you walk me through? Because you gave me a lot of confidence with tubes and some other stuff. Let's at least talk Matt Raley's rubber game. What when you're setting out, you got a guide trip up there. You're doing this gig up there. When are you thinking rubber in the North Woods? Why are you thinking rubber, and what are you doing with it?
Yeah, you know, like our fish up here in northern Wisconsin, they do like jerk baits as a whole. You know, some places, you know, you think of like Minnesota, like bucktails. And there is a good rubber bite in Minnesota, you know, during kind of mid-summertime when the fish are off the structure a little bit, not up shallow in the sand, weeds, rocks. You know, they bite rubber there, and then late fall. Our fish here, our lakes are, you know, and the species in general, like the clear and barred muskies, they sit a little bit deeper on average anyways. You know, obviously a wide variety of lakes, you know, I'm just kind of like generality of things, is these fish generally sit a little bit deeper than like Leech Lake spotted fish do. So, you know, a rubber bait, you can get down to the fish, you know, so... And rubber being a bait that sinks, you can work it really at any depth. You know, I can work, you know, they got all different kinds of stuff, unweighted rubbers, and then you can modify baits with, you know, to put more lead on them to get them to go deeper, you know. So it's just all about, you know, that bait is just versatile versus like a bucktail, you know. You can't really... throw that and get that down effectively in 30 feet of water unless you're trolling with, like, you know, a downrigger or snap weights or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like our fish just respond best as a whole throughout the season to, you know, like a jerk bait. You know, they like the start and stop of baits more so. You can trigger a lot more bites with the reaction strikes on a jerk bait. I mean, some places, you know, like it's, like I said, Minnesota sometimes in September, it's like speed out of a bucktail, you know, like burning bucktails is going to trigger those fish during that time. And we have that for certain times of the year too, and that's generally kind of early fall here as well, but just, it's just not like a super staple thing to do. You know, certain bodies of water, they respond to that a little better than others. And a lot of our fish are, like most all the lakes up here, are weeds. You know, we don't have a lot of fish that fit up on sand because a lot of our breaks that would be sand have weeds all the way on them, you know. So, So I guess, like, you know, when we fished together, it was kind of midsummer. Water was warm. You know, we wanted to, you know, I kept the boat, you know, pretty much like 3/4 of a cast off of weed edge. You know, I didn't want to get too far away, you know, where we still hit the edge, but I don't like the, like, full cast, you know, because generally speaking, your bites are going to be one of two places. You know, say 90% of your bites are going to be in your first 10 feet, you know, of the cast. And so I want to make sure we're always hitting that 10 feet. We're not too far off of it where we're missing that 10 feet, you know, and because they're usually pretty tight on the weed edge, you know, and I pick a lot of lakes throughout the summer that have like 8 to 12 foot weed edge on them. And then it kind of pinpoints those fish are going to be on that spot. You know, I can kind of eliminate pretty much weed edge in during the summertime. And I mean, obviously there's still fish roaming off of structure too, but the fish that I want to target are going to be there, you know, with the techniques that I'm doing. And there's a decent population of fish there that are kind of concentrated on the weed edge during the summer months here. And so that pretty much kind of like a generality of, you know, about third week of June until like mid-August. And then that kind of extends a little bit farther on some of our bigger, deeper, clear lakes. They'll kind of still be on the weed edge a little bit later, but we kind of get some of those lakes that are on a little bit shallower weed edge typically. Then once we start having those cooler nighttime temperatures and they'll start mid-August, they'll kind of start sliding up in the weeds a little bit. And then the fish kind of start spreading out a little bit more. So I guess, like, you know, the metabolism's cranking pretty hard in the summertime, and they want baits that are kind of move fast, you know. And but, like, just like a jerkbait, you get more reaction strikes out of it, you know. It did happen, you know, we were kind of in a weird bite, like, when we fished. Like, we had quite a few of our bites were, like, at the boat, which would I would kind of say as a general total would be, like, 10% of my bites throughout the summer. But we kind of
we're kind of in a weird
window. Yeah, we were just like the weird window, like through a couple weeks there where I just like we were catching fish at the boat on rubber. So, which is kind of a, I don't know if fish are now all of a sudden maybe more conditioned now, maybe, or it was just kind of a weird window for a couple weeks there where we're getting most of our bites where they're kind of following it. And then as soon as you start working the bait up to the boat, that's when you get bit.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of like the other 10% of the bites. And then, you know, especially like midsummer, most guys, if you're getting follows on rubber, especially like in this area, it just means you're going too slow. You're giving the fish too long to analyze the bait. You know, you need to move it at a speed where you get bites. Like I tell people, we're not going to go see 6 to 10 fish today. You know, we're going to get our bites, you know, and that's typically what we get. You know, if we get like more than a couple follows, then I can tell you you're moving the bait too slow. So.
I like that point where it's not about follows, it's about bites.
Yep.
And I think that probably is, that's a little overarching though too, where do you think, Matt, especially in the water you're guiding for muskies on, if you're seeing follows, is it a speed thing or is it a bait selection thing? So let's say a guy that he's new to the game and he's a bucktail or topwater. Should after follow number two, should speed be a consideration, or is it a switch in presentation?
I would generally start with speed. Like obviously, like you were able to find some fish and you know get them to follow, you know, and then I would kind of like start with speed more so than anything. And sometimes, like I would say, if you know, like on a bucktail, if you're getting follows. Generally, if you're getting follows, let's just say you're throwing a junior cowgirl, you know, maybe downsized to a showgirl, something like that. It's usually like, especially in that situation, you know, like if I think I'm getting the proper speed, we're getting the speed that I think we need to go, we're still not getting bites, like then I generally go down a size and something, you know.
Right. Just to get them to commit. So.
Yep.
In the Northwoods, you know, and something I know you know a lot about is body language on those follows. Talk about, because those greenies, a lot of times they're different. They're just a different kind of animal, if you will. What are you looking at body language on those fish to sort of make that assessment on what you need to do? What do you need to change up? Like, is it wide swing and tail? Is a lot of S to it? What sort of like, you see a client, he's got a fish that comes in, and you go, ugh, we need to do something. I know that's the tall order. That's a tough question, but you know, it's I ask the tough questions, Matt. It's the people's court.
Yeah. I mean, like, obviously, like, when I'm fishing to just get bites and not follows, I mean, I just kind of got to grind through stuff, you know, and kind of, because I'm not used to seeing many fish in a day. Uh-huh. You know, I just don't see many fish. I don't see many fish come to the boat a lot in the summer. I don't see many fish. We get our bites or nothing. So, you know, maybe mixing things up a little bit there, you know, but like on other baits, you know, if we're starting to get some follows, I mean, we've located a fish, you know, okay, we know one's here, you know, and then we'll kind of, you know, based off of what I see, I mean, obviously that fish was hot, maybe a bad figure eight or saw the boat, but it was pretty hot, then I'll usually give that fish maybe 10 minutes, you know, maybe just go down like 100 yards or something like that, uh-huh. Send the boat back around and refish through there or something, where we might be able to get that fish to go. I mean, if it's kind of a slow, lazy follow, I mean, maybe we're just not in a good window right now. And, you know, if I'm like, you know, working with a, let's say on a 4-hour trip or something, and we got a couple hours left, you know, we can come back to that fish a couple times. I mean, that's half the battle sometimes in muskie fishing, is just kind of figure out where these green bastards are, you know?
Yeah, so, where are they? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, so, I mean, if people are moving fish, like, sometimes, you know, can be half the battle. Like, you found some, you know? Mm-hmm. And at this point, you know, I'm not too concerned about, like, spooking fish off of spots too much. I mean, like, a muskie, I mean, you can do it. You can move fish off a spot, but, I mean, just from my tournament experience, like, if I know fish are there, like, I'm just going to keep pounding it. And a lot of times, like, I mean, it doesn't matter. Depth, you know, so much clarity. I mean, like, if fish are there, like, a muskie's not scared of much, you know?
No.
I mean, it has enough suckers and bluegills and perch and stuff swimming by it. So if your bait's just one of them, like, you might not see that fish again, you know, for a while. But I wouldn't be scared that to keep pounding an area, or if you're, you know, not 100% sure what you should throw. I mean, just kind of just go back and forth across that area again. You might not see those fish again until they want to bite, you know, once mm-hmm. you pick the right lure. But
you're saying, you know, you're not going to scare that fish off the spot.
Typically, no. I feel like you don't. I mean, like, yeah, there are times, you know, if you get the boat too close and the fish is, like, right up on something or whatever, you can, like, spook them off of it. But, you know, usually they're just going to, they'll calm back down and go back to where they are, you know, to say, mm-hmm. you know, like, if a fish is on some shallow rocks and you get too close to it, they see the boat and they take off. Like, they're going to come back, you know, eventually. So, but most of the stuff I'm fishing, you know, especially like in the summertime, like I'm, you know, we're fairly, you know, the fish are 8 to 12 feet of water kind of deal. You know, I'm not too worried about like moving that fish and like scare, you know, blowing up the area. Maybe like the biggest thing I don't like to do is just like rip up a lot of weeds, you know, would be kind of one thing, you know, maybe I try not to do, you know, in this situation. But I mean, you know, I mean, the tighter the fish is in cover, like the more, you know, if like month of September can be a little bit frustrating fishing, you know, especially like jerk baits, you know, if I'm trying to get like have people, you know, pop a Medusa through the weeds. I mean, yeah, a lot of casts, you're ripping up weeds, but, you know, and you're making a lot of casts because like their strike window is a little bit smaller when their fish are buried up in the weeds. You know, they just don't have like that open water to visualize, you know, like they're sitting in a pocket or they're buried up in a patch of cabbage or milfoil. Like you got to get a little bit closer to that fish to get it to bite, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, some of those situations, I mean, I'm making like little flip casts, you know, 3-4 pops, 3 casts, 3-4 pops, you know? So I say like the tighter the structure I'm fishing, you know, the strike zone's a little bit, it's smaller for the fish. So you got to like, you know, and you got to keep that rod line angle up so you can keep a bait that sinks hard down, you know, with a jerk bait. You got to just make shorter casts, you know, and keep that rod tip up and really kind of really work the area over to get your bite sometimes, especially if they're month of September or early October up here with fish are real shallow, buried in weeds, you know, so it's where some baits, you know, like burning bucktails over that, the bait's just going too fast for the, you know, the strike window that the fish needs to get, you know, get your bites.
So, something you just said that I fully believe in, and I want you to extrapolate on. You just differentiated between broadleaf and tight weed, right? So milfoil being tighter
and denser.
And so something me and Jay have talked about, which is there's a dampening factor, right? So it's almost like acoustical foam where, you know, the water disbursement of a bait might not reach that fish. So what's your concept on that, Matt? What, like, when you're approaching milfoil versus broadleaf cabbage, explain that and sort of in your own words, because it's something we've talked about before in the podcast, but it's, I think, is like superbly important addressing the different vegetation and how that affects how you're fishing it.
Well, I mean, I guess I've really never thought of it in that regard, I guess. I mean, just kind of, you know, what kind of weeds the lake has to offer, you know. You know, we got some lakes, milfoil, especially, you know, you're using milfoil, and in bigger sense is probably not good, you know, in a lot of lakes up here. But, you know, for example, like Eagle River Chain, I mean, they've done a lot of spraying on that to kind of really kind of knock down the milfoil.
Right.
But I can tell you, like, there's some milfoil patches. I mean, the muskies love it, you know. I mean, muskies do like milfoil, but it's kind of weird, like, you know, where there's actually patches of other weeds around it. But, like, the cherry, you know, the nuts is that 10-yard patch of milfoil on that spot, you know. And, you know, it's just all about, like, knowing, you know, that's just with knowledge of knowing the water and those situations, like this 10 feet around here is good. But, I mean, it's thick. You can't fish through the milfoil, like, when it's shallow, it's all up on the surface. You can't really put much of a bait through that stuff, so you got to work the edges. Where, like, more so like cabbage, like, there are certain lakes, you know, where it might be like celery grass or some other kind of like a curly leaf pondweed or something. And then there's a patch of cabbage, and now, like, that's the cherry spot, you know.
Right,
like,
in the spot on spot on spot.
Yes, there's like a little like 10-yard patch of cabbage on the inside turn, you know, this. Like, now that is kind of the cherry spot on this lake, you know. So I guess I don't, you know, and where cabbage, you can work baits through it typically a little bit better, you know, like it's a stiffer weed where you can contact a bait through it and rip a bait through it a little bit easier than you can milfoil. Milfoil, man, just so soft and stuff, where, like, you can't really work baits through it as easily, you know. So, I mean,
true,
sometimes milfoil fishing kind of sucks, but you know, like, you know, I know, like, one PMTT down in Madison Chain, I hit a big patch of milfoil. Not that big, for the bay, like, it was probably like a 20-30 yard stretch of milfoil that was thicker than the other milfoil that was around it. And, you know, like, literally, like, I hit it with the boat, you know, I just plowed into it because I didn't know it was there. And I looked back at Nate, I'm like, we're catching one right here. You know, like, let me just get to the outside of it. And sure enough, like, I just popped the boat through it. He made a little flip down the edge of it, a couple pops, you know, and they ended up losing that fish. It, you know, we ended up tying for the win in that tournament and lost the tiebreaker to another guy that Jay knows, Nick Ligg, and that was his PMTT win in his career. Mm. But he ended up sticking that 47-inch fish to tie us the next day, and he kind of stopped on the nuts, like, you know, the next day and caught that fish, so to tie us. But, you know, just, you know, like, I, you know, just kind of called their shot on there because I just knew, like, that patch of milfoil looked good, you know. And, you know, there was a good fish on it, you know. But, I, you know, just kind of, like, lake depending on what weed type, you know, might be the best to look for, you know, and depends on the kind of the time of year. I mean, yeah, cabbage is in general. You know, like cabbage is kind of like a early season weed, I guess you call it. So that comes up a little bit earlier here, you know, or lakes that do have some milfoil in it, you'll get some cabbage to come up and like that looks good. And then all of a sudden, like midsummer, that milfoil really blows up and then kind of fills in, you know. Well, but I guess, I don't know, like I don't know if I really answered that question.
No, I mean, I'm just sitting here. One thing we've never talked about in the podcast, and you just sort of opened a new avenue, if you will, is identifying the different species of these cabbages, or I shouldn't say cabbage, the different strains of aquatic vegetation, which is because intrinsically, you know, like a broadleaf tobacco cabbage, right? I'm fishing Eagle Lake, and I see that like when you were saying, like, you and Nate Osfar, right? Your boat partner, right?
Yep.
Who is also a bad man on a musky boat.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys saw that and you went, this denser milfoil, there will be a musky there. Or, you know, we were just talking to her back a few weeks ago where it's like, we're talking about tobacco cabbage. Knowing what that is, there's a value there, folks, for... You know, Jay, I need to put something on the app, to be honest with you, because my brain's spinning of going, what does that look like? So I'm going to add that to the app here very, very soon and do a breakdown of what this different cabbage looks like from a boat perspective. But educating yourself on this aquatic vegetation and understanding how I think, and I'm just sort of riffing here, Matt, but I think the way I conceptualize it is the level of entanglement, if you will, right? So where milfoil will be exceptionally very entangled, right? That's why I say the dampening factor of if you run a small bucktail by a very dense patch of milfoil, that vibration will be muted, where a broadleaf cabbage that will transmit through it. So... You know, what I'm glomming from that is how important it is to understand the differences in that aquatic vegetation and how to exploit them. So, boom, head explosion.
Yeah.
That's why.
There's something. Yeah.
That's folks, this is why he's won people making tater tots like 7 times. This is how, knowing what he knows, that's how you end up smack dab in the middle of winner circle. That's it.
So, you know, I would say just generally speaking, like around here, like a dense patch of milfoil, like the fish are going to be sitting tight to the edge of it, you know, but 200 yards away, like on a, you know, a good patch of cabbage on the same lake, which is also just as good of a spot. But I know, like, hey, I got to, like, get my baits, you know, up across the cabbage because those fish are going to be buried up in it, you know, on the same day. But it's just how do I approach this 30-yard stretch of milfoil here? I know, like, hey, I can't land my bait in there because it's a wasted cast then, you know? Like, you're not going to be able to get your bait through that patch of milfoil. I got to land it on the edge. Versus 200 yards away, you know, hey, there's a good patch of cabbage right here, but those fish sit up in it, you know, and you got to get past it and work your bait through it, you know? And then, you know, like I said, you know, same day, you know, the fish will be in both locations, you know, but it's like, you know, that they're so it just, you know, how it has to, you know, not just like knowing that water in particular, you know, and, you know, where those patches are. But to find it, you know, if you're on a new body of water, I mean, you can certainly tell the difference on a graph, you know, from cabbage to milfoil just by looking at it on a graph too. And if you have any questions, like I've done it a bunch, you know, like, I just want to fact check myself and drop a bait down and drag it for 5-10 feet and then pull it up and see what you bring up. And then you can, you go to another area if you're graphing, and okay, this is what this looked like on the graph there. You brought the weed up. Okay, this is what this is here. And okay, this looks a little bit different where you can see individual stalks versus like a mound. Typically, mm-hmm. like the difference between your milfoil and your cabbage, like you'll actually see the individual stalks of cabbage coming up on your graph. Drop a bait down there. Oh, okay, yep, this is broadleaf cabbage here, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, that carries a lot of weight because you'll see people are looking at their hummingbird or their Lowrance or whatever it might be, and that's a big move, which is, and the same thing, Matt, I'm sure you've done at some point, like before Panoptics or side scan or all this stuff, people go, well, those are walleye or this is this. The way you figure that is you catch them one, right? You catch the fish. But to differentiate in those weed types, another thing that will happen, and you've already sort of talked about it, where you'll have a mix of weed. You know, once you realize that there's a transition, I often think of that very similar to like
that is exactly what I wanted to bring up too, Steve. Yeah. That transition point when you start to get weeds mixing mm-hmm. is always good.
Yeah, it's as good as like hard to soft bottom. You know, I don't know. Maybe.
Oh yeah, a lot of my like favorite spots. You know, like
I don't know.
On certain water, I mean, like the areas that you have the most amount of change in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I you know, it's, you know, because like, you know, it's just like, okay, you got a pretty good complex of little. I'm just trying to like think, like for us, like down in Kentucky on our last PMTT win, you know, like mm-hmm. it's won us a spring tournament in that area, and it won us the championship. Completely two opposite ends of the spectrum of time of year. One was the spring, one was the fall, you know. Mm-hmm. But both times we needed a fish, and it's just like, okay, we're going to this area, and this couple hundred yard stretch has a lot of different stuff to offer to it because it has a lot of different change to it. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, like you can present your baits to a bunch of different stuff in a short window of time of fishing it because the lake has quite a bit of change to it in that area, you know. There's a bunch of, you know, turns and points, just like little stuff, you know, like a lot of pockets, little points, you know, that stick out like 50 yards and pockets and turns and stuff like that on it, you know. And so that area, it's like, okay, if we could, you know, like that's something I like, is areas that have the most amount of change to it, you know. Just like the lake that we ended up catching all our fish on when we filmed together, I mean, that lake, I like it a lot because mm-hmm. there's a lot of places where there's a lot of different, you know, points, humps, you know, inside turns, you know, different yeah. little pockets, like everywhere over the lake versus some of the lakes up here are maybe of the same size, but maybe there's only like a couple points, you know, maybe a couple weed patches here and there. Like it doesn't offer a lot of different stuff, you know? So like you got a couple spots to fish, but if, you know, once you go through that little milk run, it's kind of like, okay, then you're fishing a lot more like B spot, C spot, mm-hmm. stuff like that, you know, to like sure. go through your time. So like I like to pick a lot of lakes up here that have a lot of options, you know. And you know, and it's not like it's a lot of, you know, not like it's a lot of like different options, but it, you know, you know, like in the summertime, you know, there's a lot of nice in the midsummer we're fishing that have a lot of points and humps, and you hop from one to the next, you know.
Mm-hmm.
yep
when in Northwoods in mind here, so
yep.
With, because essentially you're talking structure fishing. When Matt Rayleigh sets down and you're looking, you folded out this map. I don't know if people fold out maps anymore. I do because I'm 7 billion years old. But Matt Rayleigh's pulling up a Navionics on his iPad. What are things? What are the structural elements to just get your brain going? Where I know a muskie will be there. You've never fished it, but you know it's going to work. What are your prime structural elements? And then number two, how do you grade those? Because from an A to B spot, what are the things that like stand out like a flashing neon sign? And what are some mm-hmm, of the secondary mm-hmm. stuff you're looking at?
Yeah, and that varies a little bit with time of year,
uh-huh.
You know. So I guess, you know, you know, are we talking like midsummer, you know, like,
yeah, when everybody's fishing,
like,
yeah,
on that lake, you know, or that, okay, midsummer, you know, like I like main lake structure, you know, your main like points and humps, stuff like that, where, you know, like midsummer, you know, typically adjacent to main basin, you know, stuff like that, that has a good break to it. You know, obviously this part of the world here, a lot of our spots are weed based, you know, mm-hmm. So looking for good weeds, stuff like that, but main lake stuff, a lot of time in the summer, but you know, let's transition to some of the same water, but in September, you know, and I'm not hitting quite as many points and main lake humps and stuff. I'm going to go back and fish like more like I call them like musky bays, I mm-hmm. guess you could say, like the weedier, sloppier bays that are usually mud bottom, typically that don't have like a big steep break off of them, where it's kind of a shallow bay, maybe in the back of it, it's kind of marshy, you know, so like that time of year, you know, the lakes that I'm looking for that have that kind of structure in it. Then that kind of goes to like early season too, you know, like, okay, you know, we open up Memorial weekend, so first week or so, depending on when ice is out, you know, like we've had the last couple of years where we've had a little bit late ice out, so, you know, we're still seeing some fish kind of in the spawning bays, you know,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, it varies depending on the time of year, like where I'm going to where, you know, I'm going to pick this lake versus that lake. You know, that's the nice thing up here is because we have a ton of options to fish, you know. Mm-hmm. So typically I go to the lakes that I feel have the best structure type for kind of the time of year. And then you can kind of break it down with to, you know, like what we got for a day weather pattern wise, you know, mm-hmm. what we're working with weather. And then, of course, when I'm guiding, it kind of depends who I have as customers that day too. You know, I know this guy can throw good rubber, you know, so we'll go to these kind of lakes, you know, now, but, you know, I have an older gentleman or somebody that's not experienced or, you know, a couple 14-year-old kids, well, I'm going to go to this kind of lake where, you know, I'm going to go to this kind of lake where we should have success more on bucktails and topwater, you know?
Right.
So I kind of just, I mean, like people hop in the vehicle with me. So there's some days they're like, where are we going? And I'm like literally in the truck. Customers are in the truck with me.
Right.
I met them at the muskie shop and I just start driving. They're like, where are we going? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just driving. Yeah. I'll figure it out, you know, make a few turns. I'm like, okay, we're going to go here.
What do you like you to throw?
Yeah. And sometimes like I'm, you know, if I got new people, like I'm talking to them as I'm driving and, you know, we end up at a lake. Like when I was picking them up, I didn't even think that it was in the back of my head to even go to, you know?
Right.
So,
right.
You know,
yeah.
I do that all the time. That's like almost a definitely like a weekly thing where I pick people up and I just start driving. They ask me where I'm going. I'm like, I don't know. I'm just driving and I think of something. And
Heading north for a while.
Yeah. Going. Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
What do you like to throw? Yep. Bucktails. Here we go.
What do you
boys.
Like to throw? What are you looking for? Yeah.
Yeah. What do you, what's the idea?
Some
here?
People just, yeah. Some people just want to see a fish and some people are obviously going to, you know, want to get into a, you know, trophy situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I try to ask maybe some of that stuff beforehand and, you know, and of course everybody wants to catch fish and they want to catch big fish. You know I mean? Like that's sort right. of like, you know, like, oh, we want action, but we want a big one. It's like, okay, well, you know. Yeah. And then,
we want four, you know, of course, 4 or 5 50s like, today. Yeah, it's nothing to
yeah,
ask for.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously. I mean, who doesn't, you know? But, right. Like, okay, reality, I'll get to see who I'm dealing with some days. And right. Obviously, the more you do it, you get more people. You know what you're getting yourself into before it comes, you know. Right. But
I want action, and I want big fish. Nothing but
yeah,
four, 40 inches course. Plus. But yeah. 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 5 or 6 contacts. Yeah. Wonderful. Don't they all? So.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'll tell you. What you touched on about the weather read, you know, reading yeah. the weather, especially in that area. You know, you have everywhere has volatile weather, but the Northwoods being its own sort of animal. What just your basic read on weather and how you're going to approach a day from high, bright sun, dead flat, calm to the stuff we're all shaking our boots going, oh, we're going to catch some fish today. Like, what's your game plan under some different scenarios, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, obviously guiding. Well, you know, I'll just kind of, you know, obviously you got what you got to work with for the weather for that day. So, you know, midsummer, weather, like, okay, like we got a good front coming in. It's predicted to be here at, you know, 6-7 o'clock mm-hmm. at night, you know, and I got a good fisherman in the boat with me. Like, yeah, I'm going to go try for something good, you know, mm-hmm. You know. And if, like, hey, we got a guy who just wants to go catch a fish, like, okay, we got some weather coming in, like, hey, this should be a good bucktail topwater bite, we'll go at it, you know. Midsummer, to be honest with you, I mean, I just like consistent weather because, I mean, it's, you know, that's a nice thing about summer. You usually have fairly consistent weather. Mm-hmm. You know, water temperatures are warm. Even if you got, like, a little front coming in, the water's still warm. It's not, like, dropping it a whole bunch, you know. So, I like consistency, at least, you know, the longer any weather stays consistent, no matter what it is, it's going to help your bite, you know, mm-hmm. You know, it's like when things change really quickly, you know, obviously like in say the month of June, you got a cold front that comes in. I mean, that's going to usually affect your fish negatively, you know, so, you know, but at the same regard, like the first good cool down we have in the month of August is usually dynamite, you know, usually they're jumping in the boat, you know, you get that nice mm-hmm. north wind where you get the drop of humidity, you know, where it's like the first day that, you know, you got to wear probably almost like a light jacket in the morning and a sweatshirt, you know, for a good right. bit of the day. Like usually that cool down right then and there, usually you get like, it's usually dynamite where it's nice north wind and, you know, no, you kind of lose our humidity and stuff like that. You know, that cool down there is, you know, is usually cherry there, you know, right. that's another, you know, yeah. thing, you know,
where the fish get the first taste of fall. Like it's yep, a, so yep, things are changing, kind of like boys.
The,
yeah.
Kind of like deer movement. The very first snowfall, you know, they all go crazy. Yep. They all go running around
deer.
Yep.
Well, what would be,
I mean, consistent weather is great. I mean, obviously you have like, you know, obviously midsummer, you know, all summer long where you kind of get the big storms that come through and, mm-hmm. you know, it works out usually pretty good around here where we kind of get our storms that kind of come through and it's usually evening, you know, so that's kind of nice. You can kind of correlate that with a good evening bite, you know, kind of sure. deal. But, you know, obviously like, if you have a really good bite tonight, that means my tomorrow morning trip might be a little tougher kind of deal. So that's why I just like yeah, more
consistent. Right. Matt, how was yesterday's trip? You know, yeah. you're sitting there going, yeah, you don't want to know, buddy. So,
yeah. So, I mean, that's why I just like consistency. You right, know? Right. I mean, like, yeah, it'd be great if I knew I could go out and just catch, you know, one fish and like decent fish or
yeah
every day, you know, but obviously you're gonna have your days where you catch 5-6 plus and some days, you know, you get the skunk, you know. It is what it is and you're making your living off of Mother Nature.
I've always said to people, it's like, if I knew when the bite window was, guide trips would be 17 minutes long. It would be like, all right, you're gonna meet me at 4:17. I'm going to have you back at the boat by 4:45 with your picture. Thank you for playing.
Right.
You never know. You're sitting there going, you know, the number one rule in showbiz is don't work with children and don't work with animals. And we're out here doing yeah. both. You know, you're doing bad yep. stuff. Obviously, you're well-versed with the blades. What are some, and you know, the vast majority of everybody throws blades. Especially Northwoods, what are some Matt Raley yeses and some Matt Raley noes? What are some like things that you see that really, really work? And what are some of the things you're watching on the boat going, please don't do that again. You're making my job hard.
yeah. You know, I would say kind of like early season. I might downsize smaller than the average person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of go the opposite way. I mean, I'm saying like probably like the Rizzo is probably the biggest thing in my boat,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
You know, and stuff like that. You know, just real small stuff early for blades. And it's amazing, you know, the size of fish you can catch on real small bucktails.
Mm-hmm.
Early, you know, and so I would almost say like probably a don't is, you know, you get some guys like, even like to me, like a double showgirl is
a little
too big,
big, yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. you know, so, you know, and some of the waters, like a double showgirl, like, you know, in the month of August is kind of, you know, about the biggest as I like, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, biggest thing is like speed, you know, like I'd say the average person, if anything, you know, like you said, a jerk bait, it's all about the, you know, if it's a dive and rise or if it's a glide bait or a rubber bait, it's all about the paws, you know,
mm-hmm.
To get that bite. And it's all about trying to get the paws to what the fish want. If it's like early season, you know, a little bit more hang, you know, versus summertime, a little bit quicker, you know, same thing with the fall. But for like a bucktail, it's, you know, you don't have a lot to work with there. So, you know, one of the main keys is speed, you know, and it's the same thing like we kind of touched on earlier. If you're seeing a bunch of fish and getting non-committals, you know, the first thing I would do is go faster, you know,
mm-hmm.
like you just gave that fish too much time to analyze that bait. You know, like here, it's like, you know, you're trying to get that bite versus a follow. And so a lot of it, you know, is speed. You know, the same thing we talked about with rubber. If you're getting a lot of follows, speed it up. Same thing with the bucktail. You know, if you're getting a lot of follows, speed it up. And then the next thing I would do would be to downsize, you know, go mm-hmm. something similar because you move the fish on it. But even going fast, then, you know, next option is to go back over that fish with a smaller bait.
Mm-hmm.
And typically sometimes, you know, especially if you're throwing something big, you throw something smaller, you can reel it in a little quicker. Typically, you know, if you're going from mm-hmm. something like a cowgirl, junior cowgirl, something along those lines, bigger spanky, what have you, to something, you know, in the, like the double eight sizes, you know, maybe like that realm of stuff. You know, speed, you know, I don't reel anything in straight. The only thing that I ever reel in straight is like a prop bait,
right.
You know, surface bait, where I kind of feel you get most bites, just like consistency on those. But a bucktail, like I never just straight reel it, you know, it's what I've talked about like in the past and some things is like a pulse and burn,
mm-hmm.
basically, you know, reel, and then kind of pulse your rod tip down. And then I don't like to where the blade stops spinning.
Right.
But I like it where you can just where it maybe you'll stall them out a little bit, and then if you're running like a flashaboo or a marabou or something like that, you know, you get a good pulse on that tail, you know, and then a lot of times that'll trigger your bite, and then boom, 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 you speed it back up kind of deal. You know, obviously.
Do you stretch too much with your blades, Matt? Like, you know, do the left right thing with the rod like midway through the.
When it gets close, I mean, obviously, like. You can't do that far out on your cast just because mm-hmm. you're moving your rod right and left. There's just too much line between your rod tip and your lure to change it. But that last like 15, 20 feet, you can start moving that. Like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, for sure. Definitely. You know, usually I'll kind of do one of those pulses and then right as it gets say about 20 feet from the boat, and then I'll change directions on it, you know, and then I already have my rod tip in the water and I'm plunging the bait down. Right as it gets down to the boat, you know, and then usually, you know, figure eights, same deal. I mean, you know, just good wide turns and stuff like that instead of, you know, swashing it back and forth, you know, you can work with people so much in a boat, work with them on figure eights, but then when it's go time, you know, they just lose everything that you just worked on, of course, you know. That happens.
Man, don't speak too much truth, Matt.
It happens.
Yeah,
but... I mean, honestly, like, that's why I try to throw baits that you get bites away from the boat
yeah.
as much as possible.
You just said swash.
I mean,
when he said, I started giggling when he said swash, and it's like side to side. There's no turn in it. It's like left to right.
I've never heard that terminology before. Just,
oh, it's perfect though. I did my due diligence. I swung it there. Can you crouch a little bit? Is there any way I can? What's it going to cost me for you to crouch a little bit and do a wide figure eight here? The hottest muskie you've ever seen in your life coming in side to side, two and a half feet. The blade stops and the bait moves left to right. You're like, oh my god!
It is amazing. I've seen some people catch some fish on some pretty
crazy
wicked figure eight. Like, I mean, like you couldn't do that if you tried one of us, you know, but they still bite sometimes.
How many times have you seen it where the bait comes out, they see the fish and they bang it back down and it hits it? And it's like, I can't ever make that happen for myself. But I've seen clients doing it. So like they come in, they pull the bait straight up. The muskie's, it's raging. And they smack it back down and the fish hits up like, I buy a lottery ticket, but it happens.
Probably one of the good customers of mine, like they fish pretty good. I've caught quite a few fish with me over the years, but I mean, the older gentleman of the pair, he just, I don't know why, but we had one up on side imaging and I was like, figure eight. And then, so he figure eighted. And then he just left his bucktail in the water, and then he started walking because he's in the front of the boat, wanted to walk back and see what the fish looked like on the graph. And I was like, and he was walking back, just the bait is dragging in the water, and sure enough, it came up and hit after that.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
Then we caught it,
Never,
and that was our fish for the day.
It never happens when you're trying, right? When you know better. Yeah, yeah. When you know better, they're never going to do it, but... Oh man!
Yeah. Speaking, and then back in the day too, like I had one, like, and Jay knows, like I had a DVD that I made, like way, it was 2008, and I was trying to cut my teeth up here, and I thought maybe making a DVD of muskie fishing and producing it and selling it, and the muskie shop carried it for several years and stuff. Like probably one of the funnest thing, So we were filming then because haven't done it since, but fishing. My buddy figure eight, like, sticks the rod between his legs,
Right.
So the bait was, like, hanging out of the water,
Right.
A foot and a half from his rod tips. He stuck it between his legs so he could reach down and grab his, bottle of delicious Miller Lite, I believe. And, when he dipped down to grab his beer, the rod and the lure went in the water. And the muskie came up and grabbed it, And of course he's there sitting with the muskie on with his rod between his legs,
Jay had
and it was all on film, and I was like, you forget the figure eight? And he's like, no, I figure eight it. And sure enough, you rewind the tape like he
it's
did.
It's a new technique I'm pioneering.
We got crotch and muskies.
Pay attention next time, Matt.
He figure eighted me. He's watching and everything. There was like, you just couldn't see the fish or whatever. But, lure came out of the water, stuck it between his legs. The lure dropped back in the water. Fish came up and ate it.
Jay had a funny one for Muskie Shop TV where we're fishing with Maina over towards Hayward. And he does all the crap, and he's standing, he's just holding it, so the lure's barely wet, and he turns, he's talking, and the thing just smokes it. It's just like,
Well, it was one of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. What were you saying,
dude? Matt was talking about that earlier, about that period, because we had fished with Matt, Steve and I fished with Matt, 2 weeks before we fished with Pete, in Hayward. And he was talking about that weird time period where the fish were on soft plastics, on tubes in particular, is what we were catching fish on. We boated four fish that day, and like every one of them was hitting when the bait was coming in. They strangely followed, and until that bait made that erratic movement upward, they didn't commit. So, and it was kind of like the same thing. That fish had obviously followed the bait in. I was in the back of the boat with Pete fishing outside. I think I was the only one fishing outside the weed line. So, 18 feet of water or something, bringing it up. And you guys were telling a hilarious joke, and I turned, after figure eighting and the thing ate it. You know, it's weird things happen. Yeah, Pete was astounded.
I think it was 20 seconds we timed it. The other thing, Matt, Jay did put together a compilation of how many times I said the word shit when you caught that big one boat side and we were trying to get it in the net.
I
think I cracked
50.
Yeah, I had
to do a little editing on that one.
Oh, it just never ends. It's, I think it just like probably 100 times. Cause here's this thing, Matt bangs just a monster fish right under the nose of the boat. And you're like, ah!
but that's genuine excitement. And I don't care who you are or what you think. Here's two guys, Matt and Steve, that have caught a million big fish. And you guys were truly excited.
Heck yeah. Did you
know, that was an awesome day.
Catching a big fish is hard enough. Catching it when there's a cameras on, man, that's a whole other animal. You know, you go out and you go to film this stuff, and you know, the day before you might catch a big one, and then the cameras are on, and you go, well, we got a 30, yeah. We got a 31, you know. Matt's yeah. up there.
Yeah.
But, you know, Matt, let me, because you talked about electronics. I know you're a savvy guy. You're a range owner. Of course you're savvy. Man of taste and elegance. Flowing blonde mane coming down the lake. Talk about the importance of knowing your electronics and what you're doing with electronics to score in the North Woods.
You know, I mean, like, it just helps. I mean, there's days, like I had a day last year for sure. First pass through a spot, you know, didn't see any fish on it, but my graph told me that hey, there's like a school of muskies sitting here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so we just, you know, fished through it the first time. I'm like, man, this spot is loaded with muskies, you know, like. Mm-hmm. I took a screenshot, you know, of, you know, my graph, just because there's like numerous muskies sitting here, you know.
Right.
But they just didn't want to fire our first pass through. So obviously, like, if I didn't have the technology of side imaging on my boat to tell me that, like, you know, you would have fished through it, and like maybe you would have went over one and like seen one on your, you know, straight up 2D sonar.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't have shown me the other half a dozen fish that were just sitting there, you know. So came back on that spot, then we hooked one, you know, and we ended up. You know, I just had a single customer that day. I didn't even cast. I usually don't a lot of times, even with a single person or a mm-hmm. guide. I just run the boat mostly. You know, you got to keep those tournament arms, you know, in use. You know, you don't
yeah, you don't do it. Buddy, when you got arms like Matt Riley, you don't waste them, boys.
Yeah, well, I'm wearing down, you know. I was driving home today. I had to stop in and I got myself an elbow brace today.
Oh,
you know?
Get yourself a muskie wrist from the muskie shop.
Yeah.
Frickin', you saw my wristband, baby. You got to take care of the guns.
Yeah.
You got to listen. These are million-dollar arms, baby.
So. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I can't wear those out. You know, it's like too many pitches. You know. You
yeah. Exactly.
Watch the pitch count, you know. So.
Anyways, we're pulling Rayleigh out of the bullpen, boys. We need to. if I was gonna, with that being said, if I need a musky closer, Matt, right? Like, if I was looking for the yeah. musky closer, it's you. Like, we got to finish it out, and we have to put one in the boat. Call him up, boys. Get him out of the bullpen. Here he comes.
Yeah.
But, oh, man.
You know, just because of the technology, though, he ended up hooking four fish, you know, regardless of the fact he set the hook on any of them and lost all four. But, you know, it would have been probably, without knowing that, it would have been a one pass spot. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah,
and would have went on with their day.
Yeah,
you know. So I mean, like, I haven't stepped it up. Like, I don't have the 360 yet. I don't have the live.
Mm-hmm.
If I ever get a motor from Mercury, I'll have it on my new boat, you know.
All right.
I'm going to Garmin, so I'm gonna go try some Garmin graphs out this year, you know. So then I'll have the live scope and stuff like that, you know, and the side imaging. I don't think they do a 360, but, you know, I'll have that in an arsenal because, I mean, honestly, tournament-wise, like, there's definitely a couple teams that caught some fish this year and actually did really well this year just by, you know, I'm not going to say it's maybe going to entirely change fishing, mm-hmm. but it is prospectively, you know, going to have people do different things. Because mm-hmm. I know for a fact, like, I know one team, you know, that in a couple of the tournaments I fished against them this year, you know, like, literally they made very few casts throughout the day. Like, they literally went and searched for fish. Right. And once they saw a fish, they'd stand up on the front of the boat and cast at it, you know?
Right.
And technology is getting to that point where in certain situations, you know, like in the two June tournaments that I know that I saw them on, you know, like that's what they did, you know, like early in the season, you got a lot of more roaming fish, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that they took second or third in one tournament and won the other one, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they did, you right. know? So, I mean, you know, and I know for a fact, like, let's just say you could go to like somewhere like a St. Clair.
Right.
You know, I don't know if it's really possible there. I'm just throwing that as an option out there right. where it's a lot of water, you know, or you can mm-hmm. drift and, you know, but if you find like a pocket of fish, like literally, I think there are certain times where you could literally just search for fish and cast at them, you know, and then you're yeah. not making your 10,000 casts. You know, obviously there's Northern Wisconsin, if fish are up in the weeds, you're not going to have that as an option, but mm-hmm. you know, especially like open water casting, I mean, yeah, you 360 inside imaging helps, but you know, even just like panning around with the live now definitely can be a game changer, you know.
Well, let's say this, Matt. So whether you're going to do the professional musky tournament trail or you're a hillbilly like me and you're trying to win a John boat on some shitty creeker tournament, you know, for us peasants, what are some of your Matt Raley's tournament thoughts? What are you doing? Is there a song you're listening to get hyped up? Are you going in this thing hype beast mode? You know, are there lots of performance enhancing drugs involved? What is Matt Raley's tournament plan?
Deep tournament thoughts.
Deep tournament thoughts with Matt Raley. Don't lose, number one. Like, what?
Deep casting until your arms bleed.
Until you listen, just whatever it takes. Now, what's the you and Nate are sitting down. You're talking about this tournament. What's the conversation going to look like? What are things that you're not going to do? What are things you're definitely going to do? That mm-hmm. general plan of attack, because Matt Ray was born to kill. He's gonna crush you. you don't even enter if his name's on the thing. You might as well. The best way I've heard to fish against Matt Ray is you might as well show up at the boat ramp and write that son of a bitch a check and just go home. You know. So, what do you?
Yeah, some tournaments. You know, I mean, obviously, like I always swing for the fence. Like that's the one thing. Like Nate and I, we always like try to do what's potentially going to win us the tournament. And uh-huh. you know, you step up to the plate half the time and you strike out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the game. You know, you're gonna have to eat some humble pie quite right. a bit in this sport. You know, so we always try to, you know, maybe not, you know, like maybe there's sometimes like, hey, we can do this and we'll probably catch a fish, but you mm-hmm. know, then there's other times like, you know, like we're trying to swing for the fence every time, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I guess I can just say like on a tournament deal, we touched the base on it a little bit of like not spooking fish, mm-hmm. you know, like if we know there's some fish there, we're going to fish there, you know, like right. I don't want to hit a bunch of stuff that I know doesn't have fish. I'd rather fish a spot a lot that I know there's a fish and hopefully hit a window, find a bait that they want to eat, and then maybe go from there.
Right.
And the biggest thing, you know, I could touch base on the pack of muskies, you know, the three championships that we've won, we've caught fish like essentially on the same spots on all three of them, you know, like that. I mean, I've won some tournaments like catching a fish here in a bunch of different spots. Like mm-hmm. I've done that, but you know, the best, if I can find spots that are holding multiple fish is ideal, you know, like, mm-hmm. you're always on fish, you know, like,
yeah.
You know, and fish do pack up a lot, you know, and I think they pack up a lot more so than people might think, mm-hmm. you know, like I'm trying to fish spots that hopefully will have multiple fish on them, you know, like I said, like, yeah, I've been successful catching a fish on this spot and that spot and the next spot, or, you know, or like a slower tournament where it's like two fish that wins kind of deal. Mm-hmm. But like the championship tournaments, the three fish that we caught on Minnetonka, like two of them were off the same spot. One was like adjacent, like 150 yards away kind of deal.
Right.
You know, two little weed flats. Iowa, literally our fish, like, only a couple spots for 2 days, but the main one that we fished, we fished it and like caught two in like a couple casts, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and it was a spot with that would hold multiple fish in a small area. Basically there was some current, they had a bunch of rain in the fall, you know, and current fall fish, you know, right. and fish sliding up in the weeds there. It was just like, you know, it was the gravy. I mean, that was the nuts, you know,
mm-hmm.
and, we, like, fished it for hours on Saturday without, like, a nibble, like a nick, nothing. And, you know, like, hated life. Like, I was pissed, you know. Like, you know, and, yeah. and mind you, it was, like, blowing 40 that day. I ended up ripping the trolling motor off my boat because it was, like, four-footers. And, ugh. Like, it was just a cluster. Basically, that day and, like, hated life. And, you know, had to drill holes in my boat to put the new trolling motor on the boat, yeah, and cost me 2 hours of fishing as it was, and hated life. Went back the next day and caught five on one spot, like literally the first fish we caught, and went through that spot, like, I don't remember, it was one or two passes before we got our first fish, even caught the first fish, boat was still on spot lock. And I stepped up as I'm like stepping up to the front of the boat to make and made my cast as I was walking up to the front of my boat and caught a fish, like two pops in, you know, and that was two, boom, like we're back in the game now, you know?
Yeah.
And, proceeded to catch three more. Like, I think, you know, I caught the first two, then Nate caught one, then I caught one, then Nate caught one kind of deal. We ended up five fish, but in second place, who was all there on Saturday too, and they ended up, you know, talking to them, and they ended up catching three fish on Sunday, and they caught two right beside us, you know, like right. We're just kind of playing bumper boats on that spot.
Right.
And they were there on Saturday, and same deal, like show up to that spot, they're right behind us, fished it back and forth throughout the day, and same thing on Sunday, you know, so first and second place in Iowa, like, was literally within, you know, we caught five fish, lost one fish. They caught two fish there, ended up getting a third somewhere else, and they lost. I think they said they lost one there, too, you know, maybe seen a couple fish, you know. So, I mean, like, the amount of fish in a 100-yard stretch was really good. Kentucky, same thing, like, I mean, it was a little bit longer. I would say it was like probably like a 400-yard stretch.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like I said, then you know, I think we hooked 10 or something over the course of 2 days.
Nice.
You know,
yeah.
On it, you know, well, it was nice. It was good. I mean, it turned out well. But you know, we went 4 for 4 on Friday, and then I lost 4 consecutive fish on Saturday.
Good job,
and then
Matt.
That dropped us down. Yeah, dropped us to like third place, and I was just like beside myself. Like we just needed to catch one fish today to just keep us there, you know. And then I think we dropped down to like third place or something. I was just like totally dejected, you know.
Right.
And then like,
oh, God, that stuck. Go
back and third day, and you know, we ended up going 4 for 5, you know.
Nice.
And then we ended up catching two on that spot, and then, like I said, we made a run in the last hour of the tournament, just like I did in the spring tournament there, went to this area that we didn't even really spend that much time pre-fishing, but we just knew, like, hey, this is, we just need a bite, let's go try there, you know. And sure enough, we went two for three. You know, I caught.
Let me ask
two more
you this.
Nate lost a good one.
Let me ask you this. When I've done tournaments, which I'm not a big tournament guy, but pre-fishing, I've always tried to not catch fish, right? Get the strike or be fishing hookless or see them and stop. Are you looking to hook up on a pre-fishing thing to know size class or anything of that nature? Or are you just looking for action and then just letting them slide?
Well, you know, I guess it all depends what I know about the water ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I kind of want to develop a pattern. Let's just say I'm going to new water I've never been. You got to get your confidence a little bit, mm-hmm. you know? So you got to at least get some bites, you know?
Right.
I've never really pre-fished hookless before, mm-hmm. but it gets to the point of like, you know, once I kind of dial stuff in, then I'm going to try to do something else. You know, and try to maybe figure something else
find
out.
Find like a secondary
try
pattern.
Structured. Yeah, because, I mean, where I've struggled a couple times in tournaments, like you do have weather changes sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cost us a couple times where we're just so dead set of doing what we've done pre-fishing and then the bite has changed. Like that happens, you know. Yeah, that happened to us on Cass Lake this year. You know, we were feeling actually pretty good about it, you know, and the bite changed. And we tried doing a lot of what was successful in the tournament, but when we pre-fished, we had zero luck doing it. So then we just kind of, we found our pattern, but that pattern had changed because we had a big front that came in the day before the tournament, you know?
Right.
So
just everything changed.
Things can change.
Been there.
You know, at that point, we spent a couple of days doing what actually did work that didn't work pre-fishing, you know, but that's what the fish now wanted with the weather change, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
I was just thinking back. Now correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, this is interesting. Like mm-hmm. several years ago, didn't you fish a tournament and you were literally fishing regular size Medusa, you know, like a 9-ounce bait, and you're fishing really shallow and you're only fishing pockets of weeds and you're only getting like one or two rips, and then the lure would be snagged in weeds and you'd have to just reel it in and fish the next pocket.
Yep.
No one would do that, you know, if they had half you know, sense in their head. You know, it's just how ineffective is that? You know what I mean? I'm only getting two turns of the handle, and then my cast is ruined. But you won the tournament, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, that's a popular thing, I guess. It's definitely like something that I see now people doing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, just because, you know, I think we were probably some of the first that were doing it. But then that kind of stunk back then because the only thing that they had was what I call the China Medusa, like the original one,
mm-hmm.
you know, and now like the one that like now Rick Albers has, he makes the mids, you know, he makes the shallow, you know, but like when Jason Summers originally owned the business and stuff and he's getting import overseas, you know, one size, you know, I couldn't do that now, you know. And I think literally that tournament, like I literally puked over the side of the boat because I was so physically exhausted, you know, and probably just drinking Red Bulls and like nothing else in my system. So
I puked off a boat once. It had nothing to do with the tournament, Jay. You know, God, Matt, we have covered so much. I always try to get super weird here at the end, so I have some questions for you. Are you ready?
Oh boy, here we go.
Are you prepared?
Maybe.
All right, guys. Here are the top questions users have submitted for Captain Matt Raley. How many cans of baked beans could you eat in one setting, Matt? Go.
All right, three.
Three. Wonderful. Name two employees at the Muskie Shop you could defeat in hand-to-hand combat.
Jay and John.
Nice. Cindy Crawford or Bill Dance?
Chance.
You got to pick, Matt. Cindy Crawford or Bill Dance?
Today or 20 years ago?
Just yeah. Cindy Crawford in her prime or Bill Dance in his prime?
I go Bill Dance.
Absolutely. And as a muskie guide, how would you solve world hunger?
Keep every rock bass you can.
Keep
catch.
Every rock bass, folks. Anyway, Matt, if people want to go fishing with you, I know your schedule's probably already packed up. Give them the info. Here's the pitch, folks. Get out your pad and pen. Get out your stone tablet and chisel. Here's how you get a hold of Matt Rayleigh.
Yeah, you can give me a call directly at 715-347-4868. Or call the Muskie Shop and at the guide's number there. And
old Jody Mike will get you lined up. Yeah. Now, you just made the mistake there, Matt. Steve Herbeck called me, right? And he said, I didn't know when I gave out my number on the podcast that many people would call me. So I'm going to say this. If you're lonely and sad, do not call Matt Rayleigh just to chit chat. If you want to talk about a guide trip, call Matt. But yeah, Herbeck, he got blown up. I'll just tell you that much. So, folks, let's use some discretion. Matt is a busy man, so if you're just drunk and you're sitting in your garage, don't call Matt. But if you Herbeck got, dude, he got slaughtered, Matt. Herbeck's like, it's 2 a.m. and some guy from Wichita's calling me just shit face. Like, Herbeck, where are you, man? So use discretion with Matt's phone number. Matt does like being texted memes, though. I'm teasing. Do not do that. Yeah. You know, what's your favorite meme, Matt?
My favorite meme?
Yes.
I couldn't tell you.
Okay, yeah, that's too hot for TV, folks. Anyway, guys, we've ran it over here. Anyway, Matt is a stone cold badass. If you want to learn stuff, he's the guy to go to. You're gonna have to come back on the podcast. He is the man, the myth, the legend, Matt Rayleigh, the freaking center of the Rangers Winter Circle. Matt, thanks for coming on. We'll get back with you here soon. All right, brother.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right,
Jay. Thanks a lot, man.
Jay doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right, let me stop it. All right, Jay, what did we learn?
Well, I learned more in one sitting today than I've learned in the last decade working the Muskie Shop.
It was unbelievable.
Did I exaggerate a little bit there? That's all.
I didn't know you could win a tournament by throwing dynamite in the lake. That was
amazing. I don't know, man, but it was really good, Matt. I'm serious. I've been saying that. He's good. And he shared a lot of really inside intel there,
good
too.
Stuff.
That was really cool.
Fun
fact,
though.
Really,
old Rayleigh, he used to work at Muskie Shop.
Yeah.
He's the Muskie Shop's like Olive Garden. When you're here, you're family. He's one of our boys with a Z. Boy.
Yep.
Anyway, we love Matt. He is the baddest man in the North Woods. I like about Matt, he's pretty understated. That's why I like, we're ragging on him a little bit. He's not one to, I'm Matt Rayleigh, I'll kick your ass, you know, or running around going, I'm God's gift to muskie fishing. But he's really good. Mm-hmm. So
thank you,
Jay. How many cans of baked beans could you eat in one sitting?
Maybe one.
Baked beans are disgusting.
You said three, didn't you?
Three, and it was like fast. Like,
it's like he's had a prepared question, or it was something he's accustomed to, one or the other.
He's done it. Mm-hmm. I will bet a Ranger boat that Matt Rowe has sat down and eaten three cans of baked beans.
He's good.
He's that good, folks. All right, Jaybird, say goodnight.
Later, guys. Later.